Welcome to Pzena Perspectives, brought to you by Pzena Investment Management, a global value manager known for our commitment to fundamental research and disciplined value investing. This podcast is presented by Pzena Investment Management, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, and is intended for institutional investors only. The views expressed reflect the current views of Pzena as of the date hereof and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any projection, forecast, or opinion in this material will be realized. Past performance is not indicative of future results. In the UK, this podcast is for professional clients only. This marketing communication is presented by Pzena Investment Management Limited, which is an appointed representative of Vittoria & Partners LLP. Vittoria & Partners LLP is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. My name is Lisa Roth, and I'm a partner at Pzena Investment Management. On today's episode, I'll be joined by several of our portfolio managers, discussing what they see as the current value stocks to watch. First up, we have frequent guest of the podcast, John Goetz. John is our co-chief investment officer and a co-portfolio manager for our global, international, European, and Japan-focused value strategies. John, welcome back.
Thanks.
So, what stock are we going to talk about today?
I wanted to pick a stock for this year to talk about that represents, you know, an extreme point of pain and disillusionment in the equity market. Europe has been a place where we've been finding a number of good investments, underpriced companies, which is our goal. And today I'd like to talk about BASF. It's a major German chemical company, 60 billion plus of euro in revenue a year. And it's a very large player across many different chemicals, including coatings, that meaning paint, and agricultural chemicals, things that help crops grow. And last but not least, a wide range of plastics that are critical to the performance in many industries, one of which being auto.
So why do you like BASF specifically?
So the reason why I'm going to talk about BASF is a lot of things have come up that have created a lot of negativity around the stock and around the earnings power of the company. And a lot of these things are out of the control of a company like BASF. So let me just tick off what's gone wrong quickly here, and then I'll talk about why it's an interesting time to buy the business. First of all, we all know that the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia shut off a major gas pipeline to Germany. The chemical industry does use natural gas as a feedstock. That feedstock cost spiked, and BASF had to port to a longer-term plan of more expensive energy, but more importantly, replace those molecules with other sources. That's been getting taken care of, but at some cost to the earnings power of the business. Secondly, Europe has, and especially Germany has been in what I would say since the Ukraine has been tantamount to a recession in the industrial complex. In fact, that recession is big enough where BASF and some other major global leaders that operate in Germany have kind of concluded that the industrial complex in Germany and wider Europe will be descaled, meaning down around 20%. This sounds bad, but the reality is that once a company has decided to set and align its cost structure with a lower revenue target, that actually puts them into a phase of cost cutting, et cetera, which is what they're doing today to improve the earnings power from this low point that we have today. The agricultural sector is also hurting because global agricultural product prices have been weak. Farmers' earnings have been weak, and therefore purchase of chemicals to help with the crops has also been weak. Last but not least, the auto sector, particularly in Europe, is weak and has been the subject of a lot of controversy in terms of positioning versus the Chinese, for example. So a ton of negativity. But let's put this in context. Despite all the negativity, they expect over the next several years to have free cash flow exceeding $10 billion. And if you think about a company that's trading at a market cap in the $40 billion range, you realize that, wow, there's a lot of cash flow in spite of all this negativity. That's what interests us. When we look at the business, we realize they're a global leader in plastics, a global leader in egg, a global leader in coatings, and their revenues aren't dependent upon Europe. So this is a situation where we have a lot of European negativity reflected in a share price. The company's doing the right things. They're in a cost reduction program to resize the complex. They're just finishing a $10 billion project in China. That has contributed nothing because they've been building the project. So that has the upside into the future of adding to the positive cash flow as well. And it's been a big negative to the cash flow the last 5 years. So a lot has gone wrong, but a lot is poised to turn for the better. And that's why we're interested. I think the cash flow does have upside over the next 5 years, if you will. So when you take a longer term perspective, we would say we're buying a global leader in these industries at less than half of what the business is actually worth. That's what's exciting. We think we are in the troughing process in both the earnings and the cash flow for the business. They are committed to capital return, both in dividend and stock buyback. So we think the governance is on the right track. So here's a company that we're buying here in the European and international portfolios that we think is bumping along the bottom and should be very interesting over the five-year outlook.
Thanks, John. Next up, I'd like to welcome another of my favorite past guests, Akhil Subramanian, who is a portfolio manager for our emerging market strategies. Akhil, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure you have multiple interesting opportunities in emerging markets, but what investment would you like to highlight today?
So I'm going to go with Samsung Electronics, which is a core holding in our EM strategy. Now, Samsung is a diversified conglomerate, but one of the core businesses, which is the bulk of the profitability in Samsung, is the memory business, where they operate in two segments called DRAM and NAND. And then they also do foundry, which is the manufacturing of the logic die upon which you place the memory. Now, Samsung has been hit by a confluence of negative factors in this business. The DRAM and the NAND cycle are in a downturn, and that happens all the time. Memory cycles go up and down. And then within DRAM, there is a subsegment called high bandwidth memory, or HBM, where Samsung has been struggling to get its HBM qualified at customers such as NVIDIA. And HBM, or high bandwidth memory, is used for AI GPUs such as the one NVIDIA makes. So currently, Samsung is dealing with a downturn in the business, plus a lack of ability to catch up to where its competitor SK Hynix is on HBM. But you know what really attracts us to this business is that the valuation is supremely compelling. Now, everything we do at Pizzino is around normalized earnings. And normalized earnings is thinking 5 years out, what does mid-cycle look like? And if you apply that framework to Samsung, it's trading at a very compelling valuation in terms of its price to five-year out mid-cycle earnings. On top of that, 25% of the market cap approximately is in cash. And the company is recognizing the fact that the valuation is quite attractive, having just instituted a buyback in the last quarter. So we're excited by Samsung because it's taking a business where there is a lot of fear and uncertainty and pain in the earnings. And if you look 5 years out, it's really cheap on normalized earnings. Now, the other thing we consider at Pizzino is downside. And you know what our analyst Brett has done is thought about, what if Samsung becomes a structurally below cost of capital business in the long run? Let's say they have a series of operational issues that never allows them to catch up and be as competitive as SK Hynix. What does that look like, which is a downside case? And even on that basis, if you assume Samsung becomes a below cost of capital business in memory, the valuation is not that expensive. So what really draws us to this business is a lot of fear and pain and uncertainty, a path to normalization, a very attractive valuation. Even if things go horribly wrong, you're actually not that paying that much for the shares today. So that's why I'm going with Samsung.
Thank you so much for joining us, Akhil. Always informative and always a pleasure to have you. We turn next to Evan Fox, a portfolio manager on our small cap, SMID, and mid cap strategies. Evan, we're very excited to have you on the podcast. Tell us, what small cap stock is most interesting to you right now?
As we enter 2025, a really exciting opportunity that we're seeing in the small cap space is Advance Auto Parts, one of the leading aftermarket auto part retailers. This is really a great business. There's four main players in this market, Napa, O'Reilly, AutoZone, and Advance, and then a long tail of smaller mom and pops without the scale to benefit as much as those big players have. Generally, the products are needed immediately, so it's relatively immune from e-commerce. And the returns on capital tend to be great because they get very good payable terms from their suppliers. So they have very low net working capital and those high returns on capital.
You mentioned their competitors. So how do the numbers stack up?
When you think about their peer group, their largest competitors, they're public, AutoZone and O'Reilly, both earn about 20% margins. And Advance Auto Part has always earned a bit lower because they skew more to what we call do it for me, where you take your car to an auto shop to do the repairs, as opposed to do it yourself. But still, even over the last 5 years, they were averaging 7% margins, and yet somehow Advance is earning less than 1% this year. Now the question is, what went wrong? And really it comes down to prior management having made a number of strategic missteps. On the back end, they never integrated their supply chain from a past acquisition a number of years ago, so the network's highly inefficient. That impacts them in two key ways. One is that it's just higher cost in terms of distributing all their products, but perhaps more importantly, they're slower to serve their clients. What really matters is how quickly you can get those components to the auto shop or to the person. In some situations, of course, it can be days, but in most, the goal is how many minutes it is so that you can get your car back from the shop quickly. On the front end, prior management actually came from, believe it or not, Pepsi, rather than from any auto market. And there were a lot of issues in terms of how they even approached serving these clients. There are some clear examples where they weren't even stocking products properly. So they'd have where a customer would come in and they'd see that, yes, you do have spark plugs. In reality, they might have one spark plug on the shelf, but in reality, you typically need four or six to repair a car. So the customer leaves upset and the store never even realized they didn't have the right product. Now, when you look at what's happened, Advance has done a great job of cleaning up the balance sheet. They divested a non-core business. So now they have a pristine balance sheet. They have money to invest to fix the business. And especially this gives them the gift of time to work through any issues that they have. And so now the new management team is taking the right actions. This is really a clear example of a value stock where we don't know exactly when it'll be fixed. But as they work their way towards it, they're really well positioned and they have that flexibility of time to get through it. And so now when we look at Advance Auto Parts, we don't need to believe that they fully close that margin gap versus peers, but even a small difference will make this an incredibly cheap name as we come in through the rest of 2025.
Well, Evan, it sounds like Advance Auto Parts is definitely a value opportunity and one of our stocks to watch. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to turn now to our Director of Research, Matt Ring, who is also a portfolio manager for our international and global small cap strategies, as well as our European value strategy. So, Matt, how are you doing today?
Going well, thank you.
So what is currently your favorite value stock?
Always tough to pick a favorite. One of my favorites for 2025 is Senior PLC. Senior trades on the London Stock Exchange with the ticker SNR. It's around 900 million British pounds in EV. Senior is a key supplier of technology parts, mostly to the aerospace market, but both to commercial and defense markets. That's about 3/4 of their sales, and the rest is to utility and bus and truck customers. It's a UK-based company. It's been in business since the 1930s. Their real specialty is in something called fluid conveyance. And this is something kind of near and dear to my heart. I started my career as an aerospace engineer doing aircraft engine design for General Electric. But if you've ever seen under an engine, like under the cowling, you see like this tremendous amount of tubes and pipes. And these require really careful design because they're actually transferring very high temperature, high pressure fluids. And that needs to be done with minimal losses for basically the best efficiency. And that's what Senior does. They have teams of engineers and they run factories to design and manufacture these complex hardware for engine makers or for aircraft makers like aerospace and Boeing. Usually at this part of the story, that's where people's ears perk up because they've seen Boeing in the news. They know that Boeing's been having its own problems. And that's really the first reason that is why it's cheap and really the key issue for Senior. As build rates have declined at Boeing, they went down from about 50 737s per year down to 15 in the first half of 2024, and they were further hit by strikes in the second half. It's been really hard for an aerospace parts supplier to predict the demand that Boeing was going to need. And so you won't be surprised to hear that margins went down from 9% down to 1%. The reason we think they're going to recover and what makes Senior a really good investment is the fact that Boeing's products are still in high demand. Everybody still wants to fly. They have record backlogs. They're full all the way till 2031. They got their labor agreement. They're working through their problems with the FAA. And while Senior is managing well through this trough, they're actually staying profitable. They furloughed a lot of their own workforce. Their earnings are really going to recover when Boeing starts making planes at a faster rate again. And I think not only that, it's if you think about it from Boeing's perspective, while it seems like it's a hard time to be a supplier to Boeing, this is actually a good time for them in their negotiations. What's most important for Boeing right now is just getting healthy again, getting their supply chain back working together, not trying to squeeze their suppliers for the last bit of profit. It's better for Boeing to put these operational issues behind them and to get those build rates up. So really, everyone's actually kind of aligned at this point. So that first key controversy is pretty straightforward. The build rates normalize, the profits can increase. The second point of upside is probably a little more nuanced. About 30% of their revenue comes from aerostructures, which is a segment that they only entered into in the early 2000s, trying to capitalize on the aerospace relationships by expanding their offering on top of the fluid conveyance business to structural parts. These are things like large wing ribs or floor beams. And so even prior to the volume issues at Boeing, that foray into structures has been a margin drag for Senior. So it's brought the company margins down from 12 to 13% down to 9%. And that business is a lot more built to print. It's a lot more commodity. It's over capacity. And even prior to COVID, the management was trying to reduce the capacity, get it more focused on profitable contracts, and then eventually exiting the business. COVID and the issues at Boeing put a lot of that on hold. But while that sort of took a pause, it would be a lot of extra upside to the profits of the company, and potentially you could be selling a loss-making company for a profit. And so that's the second piece of the upside to Senior.
So what needs to happen for long-term improvement?
So we see the path to recovery here is pretty straightforward. The earnings recovery comes back to the pre-COVID levels without even assuming the higher, the sort of second leg of the thesis around getting rid of the aerostructures segment. And the company could earn about $100 million in operating income. That would be about 21 pence per share. That's a lot higher than just the 8 pence per share they're earning today. And currently trading at 160 pence. This is less than 8 times price to normal. And by the way, it's still trading at 20% below where a opportunistic PE firm came in and made a bid for the company at over 200 pence. So you have a depressed valuation with depressed current earnings for really temporary reason. This is just the kind of opportunity that we like at Pasina and makes it a really attractive addition to the international small cap portfolio.
Indeed it does, Matt. Thank you for being here and sharing the story of Senior PLC. Next up, we have Miklos Vassarelli, portfolio manager on our European strategies. Miklos, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here today.
So, as I've been asking everyone, what is your best value stock idea right now?
So for 2025, my best idea is Bayer, the German crop protection and pharmaceutical company. For those of you that aren't as familiar with Bayer, it has a global best-in-class crop protection business, the bulk of which is the legacy Monsanto business that Bayer purchased in 2018. It also has a very solid pharmaceutical franchise and a smaller consumer products business that sells branded products like Bayer Aspirin or Aleve or Alka-Seltzer or Claritin. Crop protection and pharma each account for about 45% of the business's total earnings, and the branded consumer business accounts for the remaining 10%. So it has been a very, very challenging couple of years for Bayer. Stock's down about 60% over the past 3 years. And in a nutshell, basically everything that has gone wrong for Bayer has gone wrong. The company's been weighed down by continued litigation headwinds related to glyphosate, one of its pesticides, and PCB. It's also had a couple of stumbles with its drug development pipeline. And it's also faced some near term temporary challenges in its crop protection business. This has resulted in the company eliminating its dividend and also replacing its CEO. So I think that things have bottomed for Bayer, and 2025 is going to be the year that things work out for Bayer and the company bounces back. And so I think the group's really well positioned for recovery. So despite the recent setbacks, I think it's important to remember that the company, the value of the company, the quality of the business, and the moat surrounding its core franchise remain intact. And Bayer is still the undisputed global leader in crop protection. If you recall, Bayer paid $60 billion for Monsanto, which now accounts for less than half of Bayer's total business. And Bayer's total market cap is about 20 billion euros. So going forward, I think there are really two things that are going to propel a recovery in Bayer's share price. So first, I think the market is really underestimating the likelihood of a positive development in it with its glyphosate litigation. So with a much more business-friendly, you know, Trump administration coming to power, you know, the group could reach a less onerous settlement with plaintiffs, could potentially see a favorable legislative solution, or even receive, you know, some favorable court rulings. Furthermore, Bayer's newish CEO has been working on this for over a year and a half now. So I think it's time that we'll start seeing some results. Secondly, Bayer should also see an earnings improvement in its core business, kind of stemming from a cyclical recovery in the agricultural markets, you know, the upcoming release of some groundbreaking products like short stature corn, and also the benefit of several of its new pharma drugs coming to market. So in summary, you know, it's been a really tough couple of years for Bayer. I think the company's well positioned for a turnaround, and that's why I'm excited for Bayer and think it's a great investment idea.
Thanks, Miklos. Next, and new to the podcast, we welcome Takashi Okamura, who is a portfolio manager on our Japanese-focused value strategy. Thanks for joining me, Takashi.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
And we are happy to have you. So, I'll jump right in. What's your favorite value stock idea right now?
So, I like Tokai Carbon, the chemical company, special chemical company. Tokai Carbon is a global leader in carbon product, offering a range of high-value added materials that only a small number of companies can provide globally. Their core business is centered around enhancing the purity and uniformity of carbon-rich raw materials to create specialized products such as fine carbon materials for semiconductor manufacturing, graphite electrodes for steel making, cathode blocks for aluminum smelting, and a carbon black for tires. These markets continue to grow, particularly in Asia. Currently, Tokai Carbon's earnings are under pressure due to cyclical demand weakness across its key end market, compounded by a surge in the new supply from low-cost countries in Asia and increased export from China, where demand remains sluggish. This has particularly impacted low-grade materials for steelmaking and aluminum smelting. As a result, in the first 9 months of 2024, the company's operating profit declined nearly 50% year over year, primarily due to a steep drop in the graphite electrodes and the cathode blocks, which have turned into significant losses. That said, the fundamentals of Tokai Carbon's high-value added products remain strong, with profit from these segments continuing to grow steadily. The company is actively withdrawing from low-margin commodity products and scaling back capacity in these areas, which should improve profitability. With a strong balance sheet and a capital expenditures expected to peak this year, the Tokai Carbon is well-positioned to improve cash flow and potentially enhance shareholder returns starting next year. We see significant upside in current valuation, trading at 5x EV/EBITDA based on highly depressed 2024 earnings. This valuation does not fully reflect the steady growth of their high-value, high-margin product lines or their strategic exit from unprofitable segments. Even without the industry recovery, margins can improve from 5% in 2024 to 8.5% through restructuring alone. With this stock, we see two clear catalysts for lead rating: self-help restructuring and the broader industry recovery.
We look forward to seeing how things play out with Tokai Carbon. Thank you so much for joining me, Takashi.
Thank you.
Last but certainly not least, I am joined by Dan Babkus, who is the portfolio manager for our Focused Value and Large Cap Strategies. Welcome to the podcast, Dan. What company would you like to discuss today?
So today I'd like to discuss CVS, which I view as a great example of a classic value opportunity. So good business, should have robust earnings growth through the cycle, but they have a temporary problem that's caused the stock to trade at a deeply depressed valuation. So let me start by describing the business mix within CVS. You know, most people think of it as being a retail pharmacy, but actually that's less than 25% of the normalized earnings power of the business. It's actually one of only three of the major business lines within the company. So the other two are Aetna, which is a market-leading health insurer, and Caremark, which is one of the leaders in pharmacy benefits management, which is a very attractive business. It's a three-player market with historically quite strong earnings growth.
So what has happened that CVS screened as a value stock?
So the temporary problem that's caused CVS to trade at a deeply discounted valuation is CVS effectively mispriced a portion of their insurance book within Aetna. That portion of their book is the Medicare Advantage book, which is effectively a private market solution for the Medicare eligible elderly population. And what effectively happened was during COVID, that portion of the population was not utilizing their healthcare benefits at a normalized rate. And CVS was very aggressive in pricing policies, effectively assuming that lower levels of utilization were going to continue in perpetuity. And then post-COVID, when that population started utilizing their benefits at a more robust rate, the Medicare Advantage book was effectively underwater at CVS. So they're currently losing a considerable amount of money in that business line, which is, I would note, one small portion of you know, a rather large healthcare conglomerate. Now, just to quantify this problem a little bit, so right now CVS is expected to earn about $6 per share and is currently trading around 9x earnings, so very cheap valuation. We think that $6 includes something like $2 of losses from the Medicare Advantage book. Now, we expect that over the coming years, CVS is going to reprice their Medicare Advantage policies more in line with realistic expectations around utilization. So those $2 of losses should return to somewhere around the historical levels of profitability in that business line. And when that happens, we think the go-forward earnings power of the business is closer to $9 to $10 per share. And the starting point today in the mid-50s, we see potential for the stock to double or triple as that earnings stream normalizes. The other thing I'd point out is if we're wrong and somehow they continue to lose money in Medicare Advantage forever, which seems like almost an impossibility, but if somehow that were to happen, it's still a double-digit earnings yield. So we think the risk-reward at this price just looks fantastic. Now, whenever you have something that trades at this deeply discounted of a valuation, it's always because there's some risks out there that the market's worried about. So let me just address what we think some of those are and how we've thought about them. So the first one I would say is timing risk. If it was obvious that the Medicare Advantage policies would reprice immediately back to its historical level of profitability, then the market probably wouldn't be capitalizing the losses like they are. So we do think it could be a multi-year time frame before that business normalizes. So the timing risk is a little bit unknown. That's actually very typical of deeply discounted deep value opportunities where the timing tends to be a little bit unknowable, and that's why you get such a steep discount in the stock. So that's number one. Number two, there are some broader concerns around the sustainability of the earnings power in Caremark, the pharmacy benefits manager. And the negative case that you might hear around that is That there's some fear that they're a middleman that's actually driving up healthcare spend as opposed to helping control the cost of pharmaceuticals as they claim. And you may have even heard some regulatory noise that there could be an attempt to limit their profitability. So we don't actually think this is a logical perspective. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. So number one, pharmaceutical spend accounts for only about 15% of healthcare spend total in the U.S., and Caremark earns about a 4% margin historically, and that's been fairly stable over time. So if somehow you were to regulate away the entirety of the margin of the PBM industry, you would save about 60 basis points of healthcare spend in the U.S., so it's not really a material number. And then you would be left in a situation where instead of having three major players that negotiate drug discounts on behalf of employers that are actually paying for the pharmaceuticals, you would have, we think, much more pricing power in the hands of the pharmaceutical companies. So we don't think that's really a logical perspective that to save that 60 basis points, you would cut out this part of the value chain. The third piece of it is around the retail pharmacy. Historically, that business has experienced some pressure over time as reimbursement rates for pharmaceuticals have gotten squeezed. And the way we've thought about that is, number one, we don't embed any heroic earnings growth expectations into our long-term earnings assumptions. So when we describe the $9 plus of earnings power at CVS, we're not assuming any kind of heroic earnings growth within the retail pharmacy segment. But I would point out that CVS's relative position within that industry is actually quite strong. So there's three major national retail pharmacy chains. One is Rite Aid, which is bankrupt. The other one is Walgreens, which is teetering. And the third one is CVS, which has kind of consistently outperformed those major competitors. So we do think that major national retail pharmacies do have a role to play, and that CVS is effectively the strongest one and does fulfill kind of a critical need. So we think while there could be ongoing pressure in that business, there's reasons to suspect that the majority of that pressure may already be in the numbers. And even so, their relative positioning affords some margin of safety. So just to summarize, going back to why we're so excited about CVS, we think it's trading at a deeply discounted valuation because of this temporary problem within Aetna that's caused the earnings to be depressed. We think that should resolve over the next few years. And if so, you're going to see fairly dramatic earnings growth from here. And if we're wrong on that somehow, the stock's trading at 9x earnings, so still would collect a double-digit earnings yield, even in some negative case where that doesn't normalize. And we think what I would describe as the existential fears around the other parts of the portfolio that are also factoring into the valuation discount, we just think those are way overblown relative to the importance that this company plays in the healthcare value chain.
Dan, I want to thank you. I want to thank all of our guests today for sharing your thoughts on current value opportunities and the investments that you're all most excited about right now. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Pzena Perspectives. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. And for more insights on value investing, visit our website at www.pzena.com. That's www.pzena.com.